The Reverend Dr. Susan Frederick Gray is president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, a religious denomination with over 150,000 members in this country and 800,000 worldwide. In a powerful column published in Religion Dispatches, she expands on the headline, "Transphobic and Anti-Abortion Policies Are a Direct Threat to My Religious Freedom." And I am happy that it brings Reverend Susan Frederick Gray to State of Belief Radio. Welcome.
Thank you, Rabbi Jack. I'm delighted to be here.
You know, Reverend Susan, this is such an important topic. Conservatives continue to leverage religious credibility to advance an agenda that excludes the deeply held beliefs of millions of Jews, Muslims, mainline Protestants, atheists, and others, including Unitarian Universalists. Would you start with a description of where the UUA stands on the issues you focus on in your column, transgender identity and reproductive health care?
Absolutely. So a recent study showed that 97% of Unitarian Universalists support equality for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer people. And over 90% support reproductive access for all people, including a right to abortion in most cases. And so these are commitments that we have held for generations. One of the first decisions we took nationally to support equality for lesbian and gay people was in 1970. So these are deeply a part of who we are. And, you know, one of the things, Unitarian Universalists are not a creedal faith. We don't have a profession of faith that we all subscribe to, but we do have seven principles that we do affirm and work for in the world, and they guide our faith. And the first one is the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And that's at a foundation of our commitment to LGBTQ plus people, as well as a commitment to justice, equity, and compassion in human relationships and acceptance of one another in our spiritual growth. And so these are the principles that are the foundation for our support for LGBTQ equity and for women's equality, for gender equity, that informs our commitment to a woman's right to choose.
Why do you think that the reality of just how diverse the teachings and beliefs on these topics truly are seems to be getting lost in public and media attention?
So, what a great question. And I would say that for decades now, conservatives have worked to redefine religious freedom and religious liberty as an effort to impose their religious beliefs on everyone, which violates human rights. So, I want to talk a little bit about religious freedom. So religious freedom in our Constitution is meant to provide protection for religious minorities. It is meant to establish protection for a religiously plural society. But right now, there has been an intentional effort among conservatives for decades to redefine religious liberty as protecting those who already have power, protecting and actually asserting the religious beliefs of those who already have power on our whole society. And that's fundamentally immoral. It's also unconstitutional. And it denies the fact that millions of Americans support LGBTQ plus equality and support reproductive freedom.
You know, it's important to note through all of this that the understanding of the Constitution is not just what is being twisted and perverted by the religious right. It's the very essence of why the First Amendment was created, as you pointed out here. So if you can redefine not only what it says, but what it was meant to say, it helps to create this problem for us.
I just want to be clear about how dangerous that is, because you're absolutely right that the First Amendment was to ensure that the government would not impose a particular set of religious beliefs on all people. But that is exactly what is happening when we see states like Texas and Alabama calling the support and love and health care and welcoming of trans kids child abuse, right? I mean, this is a particular religious belief which doesn't reflect my religious beliefs, being established by the government and creating a culture of fear for families, a culture of fear for churches and religious communities, and a culture of surveillance in our society. So it's important to recognize how dangerous this is and how far away we are from the original sense of religious freedom and the First Amendment being a protection among all people from the overreach of the government.
That was very much a focus of your column that brought you to us today. Can you tell me how you believe that the policies that are built on one set of religious teachings trample the rights of everyone else?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's just talk specifically about these anti-trans policies in Texas, or the just horrifying anti-trans law in Alabama. So they violate the sanctity of the family by interfering with parents' ability to raise their children, to support their children in being all of who they are. They violate the religious sanctity of communities, of religious communities. They violate the sanctity of the relationship between a pastor and their people, right? Because I have been a pastor for almost 20 years. I was a local pastor. Now I'm a head of a denomination, the Unitarian Universalist Association. But as a local pastor, I saw the life-saving difference that it made to trans children and their families when they were able to come and be welcomed and loved and accepted fully for who they were. And Texas trying to insist that people report on families that have trans kids or are supporting their trans kids and getting the health care they need, that is a violation of the trust and the sanctity of a religious leader and their people, as well as the sanctity of that family and that religious community as a whole.
There are some people who hold to what they would call traditional values, who would say that liberals like us are using the language of religious freedom to justify or validate what they would consider to be aberrant behavior. So how do you answer that kind of an accusation, especially when it has the weight of what has unfortunately been part of societal standards for a long, long time?
Absolutely. Well, let's recognize that, first of all, that societal standards that have been present for a long, long time don't always mean that they're just. But one of the things I would say is that in your religious community, we all should have the right to believe the things we believe, to practice the things we believe, to raise our kids in our religious communities to share our values and be affirmed in our faith. But when it comes to the public square, and what happens with housing and education and job access and right to health care, that cannot be dictated by any one religious community. There has to be equal protection under the law for all people when it comes to the public square, right? So it's okay to have those beliefs and to teach them to your children and to make decisions about what reproductive services you want or don't want based on your moral religious values. It is also okay for me to do the same, right? And in the public square, we have to have free access to services, to healthcare, to human rights.
So you focused on these two particular issues in your column, but it's clear that there are other issues as well. And we shouldn't kid ourselves. There really is a slippery slope in front of us with our other rights and protections that are precious to minority faiths and other groups in the crosshairs. What other rights are you worried about if these objections to rights for trans people and for abortion rights are successful in suppressing members of our society?
Absolutely. So as a Unitarian Universalist, I believe in gender equity. I believe that everyone has inherent worth and dignity. I believe in anti-racism. I believe in religious pluralism. And I believe that trans kids and trans people are sacred and divine. So in saying that, let me name a few things that could be on the line and that others have said are on the line. I think the right to interracial marriage could be on the line. I think the right to same-sex marriage is on the line. I think the right to contraception is on the line. I think a whole host of equal protections of gender equality is on the line. It is, as a woman, I say this as a woman, although it doesn't just affect women, it infects all people and entire families. But I have a right to have agency over my body and what happens to it. And if that gets taken away, what other rights will be taken from me? That to me is a central right of bodily autonomy, of freedom, of agency, of the right to decide to have children or not have children, to get the health care I need when I need it without the government interfering in my relationship with my doctor. So to take away that kind of agency over my own body, it just makes me think that in all kinds of ways, the agency that people have, their privacy, could be taken away. I think the right to privacy is a huge piece of precedent in the court that has established a lot of rights for many minority groups and many people. And so it's very scary to consider that being taken away.
Sure. You know, we've talked about this in sort of general terms, but there's also a very personal aspect to this. A friend of mine commented recently, he's a rabbi, and said, statistics don't walk into my office, people do. And in your column, you describe how first-person experience with a family raising a transgender child deepened your understanding and your commitment. Would you talk about the importance of the impact of that kind of personal encounter?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think we can ever know fully what another person experiences. As a pastor, it's really an incredible honor and gift to be able to share things about people's lives that they might not share with everyone. And so, you know, to know, you know, in this personal experience, to witness a family who just about everywhere they went, their trans daughter was not able to be who she understood herself to be. And to be able to come into our church and be welcomed and wear what she wanted to wear and be accepted for who she was and loved and seen, like that value of being seen and cared for, we all know how important that is. And as Unitarian Universalists, we extend that love and care and belonging and acceptance to trans kids. And so I just, it's just deep in my heart, but it's not just that experience. I mean, it's so many trans people I know and those I don't know. I mean, these laws create a culture of fear. And we have seen every year over the last few an increase in the number of deaths and murders of especially trans women of color. And so, you know, there are ramifications for this, for these kinds of laws. Like when, you know, there are ramifications in that they give people license to hurt others, license to be inhumane. And we see that in other places in our country. Like we just see a rise in racism and violent rhetoric and attacks on marginalized people. And that is dangerous. And we are seeing, you know, we are experiencing results of that danger. Hmm. You know, I think of the shooting in Buffalo, and I know this is a little bit afield from our conversation, but the racism and the anti-Semitism by that shooter and what they were saying and the replacement theory, like those ideas that are being perpetuated by the right have real life implications for people in our communities and our society, deadly implications. And so I want to see our leaders take more responsibility for their role in creating a peaceful and prosperous society, rather than creating laws and rhetoric that divide and put people at risk.
So do you think there are ways that lawmakers and others committed to these absolutist policies could be effectively encouraged to have some in-person types of experiences that might trump dogmatic rhetoric and policies? Is there a way to expose people to the humanity of the issues that they're discussing?
Not always, sometimes. And it breaks my heart that it isn't always. And I say that because, you know, I know a family, I've been connected to a family, I don't know them personally, but part of our community in Texas, where they have a trans kid. And they invited the attorney general, who was expressing lots of anti-trans beliefs. So this was several years ago, before this policy about child abuse, invited him to dinner. I don't know if you know, this story was covered in major news outlets, but invited him to dinner so that he could meet their child, so that he could have dinner with their family. And they, you know, they said they had a lovely dinner. They thought it went really well. And they did that. They invited him into their home in hopes that meeting their family, meeting their children, including their trans child, that that person's heart would be changed. And it didn't, right? The attorney general, now that family faces potential review by child services, right? They're in such a precarious situation. And so I wish that was all it took. Some of that is about our deeply held religious beliefs, right? That, like, they're deeply held and they're hard to change, and that's okay. But again, it's not about your religious beliefs. It's about, we all need to be treated fairly and equally in the public square. That was the point of religious freedom, was to allow religious pluralism to be the context of our country, so that we wouldn't fall into religious fights, right? We could just not agree, but in the public square, no person's religious beliefs would force others to do something or not be able to do something. And that is exactly what we're talking about when we're talking about reproductive freedom and we're talking about healthcare for trans kids, right? We're not talking about what you teach your kids. We're talking about whether or not you as a person with your own religious beliefs can get healthcare freely and accessibly. And the government is interfering with that based on a particular set of religious beliefs. And that is unconstitutional. I worry it will not be deemed unconstitutional, but I am clear that it is.
So, Reverend Susan, other than becoming part of a UUA community, what should every listener be doing to help protect religious freedom in this country?
Oh, what a great question. Well, I think that we should all be don't allow religious freedom to be redefined. Claim it as a commitment to religious pluralism. Claim it as a commitment to keeping the government out of these personal religious moral decisions. I want everyone to reclaim religious freedom. That's one thing. Number two, we got to vote. We have the midterms coming up. We have to make our voices heard. You know, most of us vote. If we're religious people, our moral foundations inform our vote. But get out there and have your voices heard. You know, in 2020, when we faced, as we still face, but a real threat to democracy and rising authoritarianism, we set up UU the Vote. We launched this program, UU the Vote. We had over 400 churches, over 4,000 volunteers participate, and we reached over 3 million voters, helping people know when they needed to vote and have access to the vote. Over 3 million people. It matters to us that much that we fight for equal protection for all in the public square. And so if you're interested in that, go to uuthevote.org. You don't have to be a UU to participate, but we're going to be working in communities, talking to people about our values, about the issues like reproductive rights, about LGBT equity and equality. So go to uuthevote.org. You can find a group in your community and work on getting out the vote for your values.
Wisdom and enthusiasm. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. The Reverend Dr. Susan Frederick Gray is president of the Unitarian Universalist Association. Her Religion Dispatches article is headlined, "Transphobic and Anti-Abortion Policies Are a Direct Threat to My Religious Freedom." And we'll link to it on stateofbelief.com. Reverend Susan, thank you so much for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Rabbi Jack, it was a great pleasure. Thank you.